You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
It's good to be back up here. I was looking at my calendar and This is the seventh week, and I have taught once in 7 weeks. So, which is fine, which actually is not fine, because as a pastor, you know I only work on Sundays. And so if I'm not teaching, then you know that I've only actually worked once in the last 6 weeks, or 7 weeks one day. But anyway, it's good to be back up here and continuing as we finish up this Me series. But I wanted to tell you a story. A few months ago, Kendra... I already got a bad look there. Kendra has these phases. I guess we all do, but she likes to clean. She likes to change things, and I am not a changed person. And so we've learned to accommodate one another and love each other through all that. But a few months ago, we hit a spot where Kendra decided to clean out the attic, something that she had been asking me to do for months, years, decades. And so finally one day she went in and cleaned out the crawl space in our attic. And which is cool because it really needed to be done. And in there, we pulled out this box. And this box was full. And it wasn't this box, as you'll see in a moment. But it was full of cards and notes and love letters. And as she kind of set it aside and said, "Hey, when you come home, I want to show you something." And as we got it out, we discovered that it was, well, I knew what it was right away. It was a box of all the love letters, notes, and cards that I had gotten from girls throughout my years. I had been keeping them and saving them away, and it was an interesting. And there were pictures, signed by awkward junior high girls on the back. Best friends forever. Love. We didn't use BFF back then. That was before texting. We actually wrote in paper and pen and stuff. And there was that, and there were like my senior picture, which that's a whole other story. But I looked like I was about 8 in my senior picture. And so it was full. Literally, it was a box. It was like one of those printer paper boxes, this big, full of cards and trinkets, because I kept the stuff that they gave me. Hey, remember, this is that leaf that we found when we were walking by that place one time in the school parking lot. And I kept all those things. I had them all in this box, and I started looking through, and I'm like, oh, my word, reading them. Now, I think Kendra knew that this box existed, but we had never gone through it together. And then my daughters were upstairs. They're like, ooh, love letters? Can we look too? No. You cannot. Now, I need to share a few things about this, too. Despite the fact that I am a happily married, monogamous husband for 14, coming up on 15 years, and my Bible college years, I was still pretty, normal. I'm in Bible college, right? But my high school, my middle school years, I was kind of known as I had a lot of girlfriends, okay? Let's just put it that way. Kara, cover your ears right now. Cover your ears. I'm telling you to cover your ears. Your pastor is telling you to cover your ears. Your dad is telling you to cover your ears. Okay, there was this kind of joke about how many girls have I kissed. And the numbers were way beyond 30. Take them out of your ears. And so, not that I'm proud of that. I don't want you to understand that I'm proud of that. But because I'm not. And God really rechanged and reshaped me and how I view relationships. That's for a whole other series. And did that when I was in college. But up until then, I was one of these will you go out with me? And I was going out with a girl, because I saw her across the classroom and we walked down the hall together. Me and my MC Hammer diaper pants, remember them? And I had my Reebok The Pump, not pumps, like high heels, that'd be weird. But The Pump, do you remember those if you're old like me? So that's kind of did. I had a spiked hairdo, which didn't work because my mom couldn't afford a real haircut. And so it just really looked stupid. And that was my eighth grade picture with the lasers in the background. Remember those pictures? Anyway, so it was just this whole collection of all of these, I guess you could call them relationships. I guess interacting, relating with anybody is considered a relationship. But they were, oh, man, aside from just the, you know, I'm going to marry you and we'll be together forever. You're like, who is that person? Do you even remember? I don't know who that is. Like, who is, you know? And I was one of these guys. I would go to Florida over the summer. I spent the summer with my grandparents. I've talked to you guys about that before some. And I came, you know, and then I actually came across some stuff. I'm like, oh, there was Angela. Oh, yeah, and Carrie. Oh, yeah, and there was, what was the other girl's name? Sarah, and there was Daphne. And those were for my month in Florida. Oh, and Devette. Anyway, so even in Florida, there were all these girls writing me, it's like on the back of church bulletins, like, First Baptist Church, New Smyrna Beach. Hey, will you go out with me? Or actually, I usually didn't say that. It was like, Devette wants to know if you'll go out with her. Yes or no? And anyway, so I came across all these old letters, right? And so in addition to me, looking back, it's kind of weird, I know. And you guys are all like, what kind of weirdo is up front of you, in front of you? But looking and saying, okay, why did I keep these, first of all? And why do I still have them after being married for almost 15 years? That's a whole other question. So we came across this box, and then in addition to just having all these things and looking at all these different girls and the stories and the pictures and the cards and the notes and the, I mean, there was tons of things. Remember these? Oh, where I can find it. Remember this kind of note? Anybody can see that? It had a little tab you pulled out. Yeah, remember that? Back in the day, you can unfold them and you're like, oh. I had those. I had the little, like, finger thingies, like, how much do I like you? Flip here. You know what I'm talking about? What are they called? There was a name for them. Anyway, cards and junk, all this stuff. And in addition to just having it, which was weird, reading them was even more awkward. Like, I will not allow my children to read my high school yearbook. Because if you had people signing things, I was a different person then than I am now. My language was very different then than it is now. A lot about me was different then than it was now. Now, and we'll talk about this a little later, but I was a Christ follower, but not necessarily following Christ. So there are a lot of things. And just reading these cards and these letters, I'm like, oh, I could never let anybody read this. Not Kendra, and certainly not my children, not my daughters. And so, you know, as we went through this whole thing of like, I wish I could say it was this sort of like, oh, how nostalgic. It was like, oh, I'm being stabbed in my eye with Q-tips. I don't know why, but Q-tips. And so what we ended up doing is that we took, I like to burn. You've heard me talk about burning. And this is my burn barrel here that has been, it was given to me by a nice fellow in your midst. And so I went out on Saturday, because that's the only day you're allowed to burn in Derry Township, and just started throwing them in there. And I burned them and got rid of them because these weren't me. These aren't me now. These aren't my relationship. Now, I kept all the cards and everything from Kendra as well. And there's a shoebox under my bed that has all the stuff for my kids. I kept those things because I'm in those relationships right now. But these are old. These are gone. So I burned them. I got rid of them, even though there was, like, really nice things that were said on them. And people, you know, talked to me all about how much they like, you know, the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, because they were popular then. And all these things. Anyway, I won't talk about that one. But there was all these things, and we took them and we burned them because those were gone. Those were old. Those were relationships that were behind me, and it would be weird, and not even just weird, but perhaps wrong, for me to cling to something that is gone. For me to cling to a relationship that says, wait, no, that's not, I'm married to Kendra. Why would I want to keep a love note from Christine or a love note from Jessica? Or Bridget, or Andrea, or any of those people. Why would I want to do that? Because I'm not in those relationships. So it would seem, not just weird, but wrong, because I'm married to her. And for me to cling to these old relationships is just totally unhealthy and just wrong, I guess. I mean, I can't really think of a better word at this point. But the idea of saying, hey, I know I'm moving forward. I know we're married, but maybe I want to kind of keep a few strings, keep a few connections kind of back here that maybe I can fall back on. Like, is that the idea? Is it just so I can feel good about when, oh, remember when I was loved? Like, dude, nobody loves me like my wife does now. I'll tell you that. And I'm not just talking, you know what I'm saying? I'm not just talking about the stuff that you think I'm talking. I'm talking about just love. We love each other. It's great. So I threw them away. I burned them. They were gone. They were done. They were old. They are not me now. Kendra and I and Cara, Alethea, Tommy, and Jack, not in that order, are me now. That is who I am. That is Sean Fitch of 2014. And that's been Sean Fitch, well, except when the kids were born, for at least the last 14, 15 years since we were dating and married and all that. But that was the past. That was old. And so I'm new now. And I want you to get this idea this morning. As we wrap up this Me series, we talked about how the first week, how we were created in the image of God, that God made you exactly the way He wanted you. He designed you for a perfect purpose. And the fact that we represent Him. You represent Him. You are made in the image of God. And if you weren't here, you can listen to that, mcchurch.org/thepoint. And then the second week, Kirk talked about you move and how it's important that God has given us our physical bodies and we need to use them to glorify Him. And that's also available as well. And then last week, my friend Jenny came from Pregnancy Resource Center in State College, and she talked about how you matter. And how God made every intricate part of who you are, and He designed you. And so this week, I want to kind of wrap it all up, taking this idea of being created by God to looking at a new creation. And so the point I want you to walk away with today is you new. You're not old. You're not the old you. You're not the past you. You are a new you, which grammatically is horrible, I know, but I don't care. I don't care at all. So, you knew is what I want you to understand, because this idea of keeping things that are from the past is wrong. Again, for something that was completely not who I am now. So I'm not saying you shouldn't keep old love letters from your spouse, and some of you have been dating since like elementary school and stuff like that, and that's cool. But as far as these other relationships go, like, they're old, they're gone, and we're talking about Sean now, the new Sean, Sean today. Sean of 2014. So I'm going to look at this passage. I read it just a few minutes ago as the band had a powerful worship time there. Thank you, guys, all of you. But I read this passage. I'll just read it to you again just to kind of refresh because. This is in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, and you can follow. This is where we're going to be this morning, 2 Corinthians 5, 14 through 17, actually. But this is what Paul writes. He's writing a letter to the church in Corinth, and the church in Corinth had lots of issues. They had lots of problems, and he wrote two letters to them, kind of helping them deal with some of their issues. He was the one that planted those churches and was trying to work through things with them. And so this is what he says in verse 14. He says, "Either way, Christ's love controls us. Since we believe that Christ died for all, we also believe that we have all died to our old life. He died for everyone so that those who receive His new life will no longer live for themselves. Instead, they will live for Christ, who died and was raised for them." Going on. "So we have stopped evaluating others from a human point of view. At one time, we thought of Christ merely from a human point of view, but how differently we know Him now. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone. A new life has begun." So I want to look at this idea of you new, of you being a new creation. Something that is new. You're not the old you. And this is what Paul is talking about here. He's explaining to them just about what it means that Christ died for them. Why it matters. Why do we care? Why is it a big deal? And Paul is saying, hey, here's why. It's because Christ has done some crazy things for us. The first thing that he talks about is that sin is done. Sin is done. Sin is done. Sin isn't partially done. Sin isn't kind of nearby and like, oh, hope it doesn't like become an issue, or I hope that sin gets forgiven, or man, it's, you did that. Paul's saying, no. Sin is done. There is no more sin. And the song that you guys sang at the end there was just awesome. The power of sin is broken. I have been set free. And we'll come to that in a second. So sin is done. This is what he says, going back to 1 Corinthians there. He says that, "Either way, Christ's love controls us. Since we believe that Christ died for all, we also believe that we have all died to our old life." Now, this is from the NLT, the New Living Translation. The NIV is one I usually use, but this one's, I think, a little bit clearer to help understand some of the stuff going on. But Paul is saying, look, Christ's love controls us. And the word love is the word that is often used in talking about Christ and God's love for us. It's a Greek word, agape. And it's an unconditional love. It is a love that has nothing to do with what you do, nothing to do with how you act, has everything to do with the fact that God has chosen to love you. So it's Christ's love. Love, He loves you no matter what. And that's important as a foundation for what we're talking about here. And so he says, Christ's love controls us. And control is a fair word. I think the NIV says compels us. The idea, actually, the word itself means to hold fast, to press together, to be so connected that you can't get away from it, to be pushed on. And so Paul is saying, look, and this, again, foundation for what we're going to say here in a few minutes. He says, look, Christ's unconditional love that you don't deserve is forcing us, is compelling us. We can't do anything else because of his great love, because of what he's about to say here. So that to understand that, Paul's not like, hey, here's a neat idea. He's like, no, this is Christ's love is compelling us to do some things. Christ's love is compelling us for a few things. And so he says, since we believe that Christ died for all, and believe again is another, it's an interesting word. It has the idea of a judge that is making a choice, a decision. The Greek word is krino. Means to discriminate between good and evil, to make a choice, to give an opinion, or to be convinced. And so it's not just some simple word that he's saying, hey, we believe, yeah, I learned that. Like, 2 + 2 = 4. Well, I believe that Christ died for all. You know, it's not something as simple as that. He's saying this is a deep decision. This is a deep-seated conviction that I'm convinced of that Christ died for me. So, again, stay with me for a second because this is all going to make sense. But the idea Paul is saying, look, Christ's love, his unconditional love, is forcing me. Is just not in a, do you understand? I don't mean forcing like from the outside. You better do this. But we can't do anything else but respond this way. He says, we believe, we are convinced, we are thoroughly, oh, we get it, that Christ has died for all. So Paul says, look, guys, man, Christ's love is fabulous. It's amazing. It's undeserved. And we believe, we are convinced that he didn't just die for a couple people. He died for all. He died for everyone. And he says, because of that, then we are convinced. We also believe. We also have made it our conviction that we have all died to our old life. So what Paul is saying is, look, you need to understand, Christ's love is great, it's undeserved, it's amazing, it's compelling me to say this and to help you understand that Christ died for everyone, and because of his death, we have also died to our old life. He's saying the life that you used to live, the life that you were caught up in, is gone. You have died to it. And there really, frankly, is no stronger word, I would say, than die. I mean, death means to cut off. Death means to end. It means to sever. Death is a hard thing. We understand that. We know it's hard to deal with death. Because there is that. There isn't a, oh, maybe tomorrow. It's not even like, hey, I'm going on a journey for a couple of months, a couple of years. I mean, it's not even something like a military, what do you call it? When you're called into action and you're gone for years at a time, there's still that, hey, there's going to be that time when you return. But when you talk about death, it's final, it's severed, it's cut, it's done. And Paul says, look, because Jesus died for everyone, we are dead to our old life. We are cut off from our old life. So what's the old life? We talked about this the first week of the series, that we were created in the image of God. We were created without sin. We were created, let's say, perfectly, at least spotlessly. And then Adam and Eve, they chose to sin, and they brought sin into the world. We actually talked about this in the December series when we had our donkey and the four representatives up here, and we talked about how Jesus took our place and that whole deal. I forget which week that was. But anyway, this idea is that our old life was that when, because of Adam and Eve's sin, we are all sinners. We are all stuck in that sin. And so the destination, the end result of that sin is hell, is death, is eternal separation from God. That's the old life. That's where we were on our way. That's where we were going. There was nowhere else. This is the path. You were on the train. You're on the last train to Clarksville. I'll meet you at the station. Okay, I'm really old. Okay, monkeys with a 2 E's? No? Okay. Anyway, but you're on a train. If you're on a train, because we all travel by train all the time. I mean, I guess we have a station in town, which is really cool because not many towns do. Anyway, but if you're on a train and your train is headed to Chicago, if you stay on the train, where are you going to end up? That's the question. Chicago! Yeah. That's the way it works. You're not going to end up anywhere else, you know, unless there's some sort of strange happenstance or occurrence or something like that, or the train breaks down or something. But if you're on that train, that's where you're headed. And Paul is saying, look, our old way of life, we were headed to hell. We were on our way to hell. There ain't no stopping this train. Unless someone could come in and fix the problem. If someone could come in and solve the issue, because our sin deserves death. That's the destination. Our sin deserves death. Our sin deserves death. And so you are going to die for your sin unless somebody could die for you. And that's where Jesus came in. And Paul says, look, I am convinced it was God's love. God loved us so much, so undeserved, so unexpectedly, that he says, look, I'm going to send my son, and he's going to die the death you deserve. He's going to die for you. And because he died for us, we're dead to our old life. We're not stuck on that path to sin, to hell. Jesus took that for us. Jesus was the one that took the punishment that we deserved. And now we have an offer, a hope of life with him, of life eternal, of life in heaven with God. So what Paul is saying is, look, get it, folks, Corinthians, church at Corinth, because these are people that were following Jesus, supposedly. He says, you guys need to understand, man, Christ died for everybody. And because he did, we're dead to our old life. Our old way is gone. That's behind us. You're dead to it. Sin is done. It's done. It's been dealt with. So that's important to understand, because if you don't get that sin is done, if you don't get that sin is gone, then it's not going to make any sense, and we're not going to be able to move on. He conquered sin. Oh, yeah, and I talked about the payment of our death. The idea that our sin requires something. Our sin requires death, and Jesus paid for that. That's what he did on the cross. And because of that, we're not guilty anymore. We don't have to, we're not bearing the weight of, oh no, God sees us as guilty, he sees us as sinners. No, he doesn't see us that way. If we are followers of Jesus, if we have believed in him, if we are compelled and convinced and convicted in our hearts, as Paul was using the word there, then we're not headed that way. That's been dealt with. It's done. And guilt is gone. And we're going to talk more about guilt next month and the Can You Feel It series. But I just want you to get that. And here's the interesting thing about the image of God. So we were created in the image of God first week. Original creation. We were created in the image of God. Adam and Eve. We still bear the image of God. It means we are his representatives. And so our job as his representatives, we talked about how we reflect his glory. That we are to kind of bring glory to him by the way we act, by the way we live, by the way we rule, by the way we represent. Kind of that whole package there. And again, if you weren't here the first week, you've got to listen to that for this to kind of make sense. But that our job is to reflect him. And that's how Adam and Eve did it. But then when sin came into the world, that got tarnished. I mean, anybody have like grandma's old silver? Anybody? Or maybe not your grandma, but some relative or somebody gave you an old piece of silver of any kind. Only one person in this room has silver. Okay, has anybody ever seen silver? excuse me. But silver is one of these things that when it's made, I'm sure, it is brilliant. It is beautiful. It is shiny and it reflects and it just looks so amazing. So phenomenal. But over time, it starts to develop a tarnish. And it still looks good, but it's not perfect. And that tarnish, and that's kind of the way sin is for us. We represent the image of God. We represent God because of the image of God. And yet sin has kind of tarnished that. We're not that we've lost it, but it's just not as good as it could be. It's not as clear as it could be. And Christ came in, essentially, and he cleaned that up. Now that's not to say we're not going to deal with sin now, and we'll talk some more about that. But for the most part, he brought in some tarnex and dipped it in the bowl and did the whole deal. And now the silver is clean-ish. It's not perfect. It's not new. It's not the way it was originally because it's old. It's got time underneath it. But that silver is now, when you dip it in tarnex, you ever seen the commercials for that stuff? And it's gotten rid of the tarnish. And it's back to a pretty good brilliance. It's not perfect because it's not brand new. And that's sort of the idea of this image of God thing. Like, God created Adam and Eve without sin. It was perfect. It was good. It was pure. It was clean. And then sin entered the world, tarnished, got all over it. Jesus says, okay, that's not good enough. I want to clean this up. I want to solve this problem. And so he died on the cross. And that removed, for those that are followers of Jesus, the tarnish has been wiped away. the tarnished and clean. So we are now able to more clearly reflect God, because otherwise we couldn't have. Now, it's not perfect, just like that silver platter or whatever. It's got still age and wear and maybe a few dings and dents. And that's the way we are. Now, at one point, when we go to heaven, we will be made perfect. We will be restored completely, fully, brand new. And so this is this idea. So Paul is saying, look, guys, sin is done. It's dealt with. Jesus died for all. Therefore, sin is gone. And he says, next thing is that Christ is now. Sin is gone, so Christ is now. And I underlined the word Christ. And we'll come back to that in a second. This is what he continues on in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. He says, he died for everyone, just repeating. He does that a lot. So that those who receive his new life for themselves, his new life, will no longer live for themselves. So he says, he died for everyone. And this word for, it doesn't mean like for, like we use, it's kind of considered? That's a preposition. For is a preposition, but the Greek word is hyper, which means over, above. We know the word hyper, right? Hyperactivity or hyper tension, high blood pressure, or hyper ventilate. Yes, too much ventilation. Hyper means to be more of. And this word hyper, he hypered for everyone. He went above and beyond. He wasn't just like died for. He way above and beyond died for everyone. He died on our behalf. So that those who receive his new life, and that's the same idea, for those that believe, we no longer live for themselves. So he's saying, look, when Jesus died, he died, our old self is gone, our sin is gone, it's been dealt with, it's been done. And he did this so that you're not living for your old self, for you're not living for the way things used to be, because he wants you to live instead for Christ, who died and was raised for them. See, Paul says, look, sin is dealt with, it's gone. Stop living that way because Jesus died for it. Sin is done. It's time to live now for him. And that's why I have the word Christ underlined, because it's not about, it's Christ is now, not you. Get that? Eventually. Christ is now, it's not you. It's about him. He died so that you will live for him, not so that you can live for yourself. How do I put it? And this series is called Me, but really, this series isn't about you. It's about him. It's about living for Christ, who died and was raised. Christ is now. It's about him. Jesus didn't die so that you can, continue to live your way and, oh, now you've got something to do on Sundays. Otherwise, you'd be bored at home. But now that Jesus died, okay, keep doing your own thing. But now just make sure you show up somewhere on Sunday morning. That's not what it was all about. He died so that you're done with the old way, and so now you're living for him, because what he has in mind is best. What he has going is the best way. Christ is now. There was an interesting blog, and as a church plant, we've been around for 2.5 years. And so many of you never went to church or hadn't gone to church in years and stuff like that. And that's cool, because that's what we're trying. That's what we want to do. And some of you are from other churches, and that's cool, too. But this blog was really interesting. He was talking about, and I'll just be real. If you've come from another church here, I just want to let this sink in. Not that we don't love having you here, but he wrote down a guy named Aaron Loy. I don't know much about him. It was on Facebook. It's on the Internet, so it must be true. But he says 5 really bad reasons for leaving your church. And I thought this list was so interesting, because we have made church, we have made our lives, we have made following Jesus, not really about following Jesus. We've made it about following me and what I want in my way and doing it how I want things. And so here's the 5 reasons. The first reason was, I'm not being fed. And his point, I'll probably post this on Facebook tomorrow or something so you can read it. But he says, if you're coming into church and say, well, I'm leaving there because they're not feeding me. It's not the church's job to feed you. It's your job to feed you. It's very selfish saying, I'm not being fed. Well, God doesn't say, okay, it's the pastor's job. Make sure that he gets you fed. And if he doesn't get you fed, go find a church where you get fed. That's just a cop-out, because it's selfish. It's about you. And if that's why you're here, I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying leave. I'm not saying stay. I just think it's something that's part of our responsibility as a new church to say, hey,
You know, we're not trying to steal people or take people away. And if there's issues that need to be dealt with, then deal with them. The second issue, why people leave their church. It's getting too big. And that's one of the things we've been hearing around here a little bit. We're getting bigger. So what we're saying is that we are making disciples and doing what Jesus has called us to do. And so we're growing. And that's awesome. And that's going to happen. But if it's all about, well, it's getting too big, I don't know everybody anymore. So if it's all about you, then you've missed what Jesus died on the cross for. Because it's not about you. It's about Him. And we're going to keep doing that. And I pray, you know, not that numbers are what we're all about. You guys know that. But if we're shrinking, we're not doing what Jesus has called us to do. It's going to be getting bigger. We're supposed to be reaching out. You know what I'm saying? It's all that stuff there. But just look at the selfishness in this. I don't agree with everything that is being preached. That's the third reason. And I love the guy in the blog said, neither do I, and I'm the pastor. And I feel that way. You know, I've said some things and taught some things and then come back a couple months, a couple weeks, a couple years. Like, oh, man, I botched that one. I don't always agree with everything. And I know, I mean, there's plenty of you that don't agree with me eye to eye on everything. And that's part of the reason why our doctrinal statement on our website is basic. Here's the things we know we agree on. These are the things that are important. And a bunch of the other stuff, you know what? It's fun for discussion and debate, and I'll tell you why I'm convinced of the things I am, but we don't need to get into a fight over it. But this idea of I don't agree with her, it's coming back to I, me. So moving on, he says, my needs aren't being met. Because church is here to serve you. We're here for you. Because it's about you. And that's not true. Church isn't about you, and I know that sounds hard and cold and callous. Pastor said, it's not about me. I'm not supposed to be meeting needs. No. You are supposed to be meeting other people's needs, but you're not supposed to be sitting around waiting for people to meet yours. And if you are, you've missed why Jesus died. Because you're living for you. You're not living for Him. Because living for Him means you're going to live and serve and do what He did, the way He did it. And I love what he put in this blog, and again, I'll put it on the thing. He says, so put away the shopping cart and pick up a shovel. Stop expecting people to serve you and start serving other people. And again, I'm not saying that this is all of you. There's probably parts of this in me too, all of us. And then the last thing is unresolved conflict. People leave church because there's a conflict that they're not willing to deal with. And usually conflict is about me being hurt, about me and my way. And I just want you to get that. And so, you know, not that I'm here like... I think this is an interesting way to look at church and look at how we look at ourselves and not necessarily at Christ the way we should. Because Paul says, look, Christ is now. It's not about you. It's not about your wants. It's not about your desires. It's not about the things that need to be the way you want them to be. It's about Him. And it's got to be about Him. Because, listen, I'm the lead pastor, I guess is my title. I said it normal. How about that? I'm the lead pastor of this church. And if this church is about me, and I'm the one in charge, right? And we've got problems. Because I'm going to always want what I want. And even if I try to do things in a humble, selfless way, there's still that sin that is just creeping in. And so we can't be living about ourselves. We can't do it our way. It's got to be living for Christ. Because Christ is now. He is the one that we're talking about. He is the reason He died, not so that we can continue to, like I said, show up on Sunday and have a place to go. It's so that we can live for Him. Because what He has in mind, and we'll come into this a little bit later, but what He has in mind is best. That's the deal. Like, and we'll come back to that. So just hold on to that idea. But this idea that we are new creations, sin is done, Christ is now. He died so that we can live for Him, not for me, not for my desires, not for my wants, not for the way I like things, not for the way I like the temperature, not for the way I want a stinking umbrella because it's freaking dripping in here. And you can find a lot more comfortable buildings to go to, and that's cool. But it's not about those things for me. It's about Jesus and being able to say, hey, let's talk to people about Him. Let's share Him. Let's serve on His behalf because it's about Christ. He died not so that Sean can live Sean's way. He died so that Sean can live Christ's way. Moving on. Paul says that also that you are new. Sin is done, Christ is now, and you are new. And for some reason, I cannot move to the next slide. Okay, 2 Corinthians He continues on in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. So we have stopped evaluating others from a human point of view. And this word evaluate, just to know, not that people are sitting there judging, but he's talking about like this idea of how do we look at people? How do we look at life? Paul says, because Christ died to sin and sin is done, and because we're supposed to live for him now, we don't look at people the way we used to from a human point of view. The Greek word is sarx, S-A-R-X. It's the idea of the flesh and living kind of that way. We don't look at people the way that they do. At one time, we thought about Christ that way, the way everybody else does, the way the world does, the way humans kind of get it. But how differently we know him now. And what he's saying is, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are like, yeah, Jesus was a good man. Or he was a wise teacher. Or, you know, pick your whatever. He says, Paul says, yeah, that's how I used to see Jesus. He was a neat guy. Of course, Paul didn't see Jesus that way. Paul hated Jesus because Paul was a persecutor of Christians. But he said, from a human point of view, I thought Jesus was just another guy, died, did his thing. But he says, now we know him differently. He says, we know him. How differently we know him now. Because Christ has made a difference in his life. He says, this means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. Anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. Anybody that is a follower of Jesus, that has believed, that is convinced in their heart that he died on their behalf, that his unconditional agape, don't deserve it love, is what saved you and rescued you from hell. He says, because of that, anyone that believes that is a new person. And again, I'm throwing a lot of Greek at you, but I thought it was really interesting here that the NIV has become a new creation. And I love that word. That's the word there. It's got a lot of consonants in it. It's K-T-I-S-I-S. Go ktisisis. That's the Greek word. So there you go. But it's the word that means creation or a created object or a species. Paul says, look, anyone that belongs to Christ, they're a new creation. You're new. Sin is gone. It's done. It's dealt with. You're not living for you. You're not living for sin. You're living for Jesus because you are a new creation. You are not who you used to be. You're done. You're changed. You're different. He says the old life is gone. A new life has begun. Take a minute to let that sink in. If you think like the old stuff, the old life is gone. I mean, those relationships, again, I struggled to call them relationships because I knew those people. Maybe I held their hand on the bus, probably kissed them. There was nothing in them, obviously, because I'm not married to any of them, that was healthy, that was worth it. It was old. It was gone. And so it's for me to get rid of the old life because I've got the new life. And I like it. And Paul is saying the same thing about our relationship with Jesus, that the old is gone. You are on your way to hell. You are stuck in your sin. But Jesus died for everyone and your sin is done. It's gone. He says, now live for Christ because you've got a new life ahead of you. You've got something new in front of you. Jesus has made you new. Not old, new. The Greek word for old is archaic, right? We know that word, an archaic. And by the way, I'm not talking about old people, right? Y'all, you're cool with that? I'm not talking about senior citizens, okay? I'm talking about the old way of living, the former way of living. You have been made new. You are the newest thing. You are different. You're a new creation now. You're not who you used to be. And the interesting thing is, not only are you not who you used to be, but Paul says you have become a new person, and new is different from old. He says you're not a new model, you're not an upgrade. You didn't get like a wax and shine and polish and buff job that makes you kind of a little bit better than you were before. You're new. You're a whole new deal. You're a new creation. A new life has begun. You're not bound to your past. And we'll come back to this in a few minutes here, but just get this, that you're new. I don't care what your old looked like. I don't care what old looked like yesterday or 6 years ago or 16 years ago. You have been made new because Jesus died for your sin. It's gone. It's done. It's dealt with. There's a story, I'm sure you've heard about it. I need to tie my shoes. It has nothing to do with the story. Of the explorer Cortez. And by the life of me, I can't remember his full name, because I had a friend named Mike Cortez, and I know it wasn't him. But Cortez the explorer, it was said that when he came to the New World, they landed their ships on the shore, and they removed all the supplies, they removed everything that they had in the ships, and then he ordered his soldiers or his navy or his whatever people that are on ships, sailors! He ordered his sailors to burn the ships. And I don't know how totally accurate this. I mean, obviously things tend to be embellished over time, but from all I understand, this was an accurate story that he instructed them to burn the ships. Because the point was, he says, look, you know, guys, we are in this new world, and we are here to stay. We're not going back. And when the ships were burned, there was no option. There was no way to return back to the old life, to where things used to be on the other side of the ocean. They were here now. They were here to stay. And I think that's exactly what Paul is saying here. Look, you're new. There's no going back to the old way. It's time to burn the ships. It's time to burn the letters. And say that it's not about then, it's about now. It's about you being new. Because that's what you are. You new. You're not old. You're not stuck in the past. You're in a completely different place. And so when it came to this idea of you new and the love letters, I mean, if you kind of look at it in the same way, like those relationships are over. They're gone. They're done. Just like our sin. It's done. It's in the past. It's gone. I'm living for my marriage now because I love it. And it's the same thing for Christ. When he died, it wasn't for us to live for then. It's for us to live for him now. And of course, some of the content of those letters, there's regret there. There's totally embarrassment. But you know what? I'm new. I'm not stuck in that. No matter what happened there, I'm married. I'm in a new relationship, and things are new. The old is gone, and it doesn't matter. We're not stuck that way. So to kind of, I don't want to say wrap this up because that makes you think that I'm going to be done early. Goodbye, me. Paul says, we're not living for ourselves. We're not living for who we were. We're not living for the old way. Paul says, you're new. So it's time to say goodbye to self. It's time to say goodbye to the old me, the old way, and live for him. So the first, there's just a couple of things just to think about as we consider what Paul talks about of us being new creations. The first thing is that we need to stop being old. Some of you need to stop being old. And what I mean by that is some of you are stuck in your old way. And I mean stuck. Because there is no new you. Because you have never chosen to become a Christ follower. Because you have never made the decision to believe, to be convinced that Jesus died unconditionally on your behalf. And the Bible is really clear about this, that there is no new you. And I know that's really depressing, but yes, that's the reality of our life because of sin, that we are on our way to hell unless we have made that decision to follow Jesus. So some of you need to stop just being old. You need to right now make a decision to follow Jesus, because there is no, sorry, it's depressing, it's not politically correct, but there is no hope for you apart from Jesus. No matter how good you are, no matter how nice you are, no matter how many times you've been in this building, without Christ, you're just the old you. So you need to stop being you. There's a story in the Bible, Nick at Night, Nicodemus, in John chapter 3. And here's a phrase that we hear all the time in church world, and I just wanted to tell you this, actually biblical. But there's a guy named Nicodemus, and I'll just read the story. There's a man named Nicodemus, a Jewish religious leader, who was a Pharisee. So the Pharisees did not like Jesus. They were the Jewish leaders. Jesus was overturning their apple cart. He was not actually literally their tables. But he was messing up their way of life. And so it says, after dark one evening, so Nicodemus is like, go talk to Jesus. Okay, I'm going to have me some Jesus talk. And he came to Jesus. Rabbi, he said, which just means teacher. It was a respect term. We all know that God has sent you to teach us. wow, Nicodemus is getting it. So, I mean, we already know he's interested in Jesus. He says, your miraculous signs are evidence that God is with you. So you've got this religious leader, this Pharisee, sneaking out at night to have a sit down with Jesus. And he's like, Jesus, look, I know you're the real deal. Your miracles, they're proving it. You're who you say you are. You are the Son of God. And Jesus then replied to him, I tell you the truth, unless you are born again, which again, that's a word that is thrown around in church circles and in the world. And it's even got to the point where, like, if you talk about a born again Christian, like, they're a political category. Do you ever see that? Like, they're, how do you determine whether people will vote for you? Oh, dude, how are the born againers looking? And it's become such a kind of a prickly word. But I want you to know that it's a biblical word. And so Jesus says, unless you are born again, you cannot see the kingdom of God. So Nicodemus is saying, look, Jesus, you're the real deal. I want to follow you. Your miracles are awesome. And Jesus says, look, you need to be born again in order to really see the kingdom of God. And so Nicodemus, of course, replies. He says, well, what do you mean? How can an old man go back into his mother's womb and be born again? This doesn't make any sense. And Nicodemus, again, he's thinking about it from the reality of the context. That, again, born again is thrown around in so many ways for us. But he's like, wait a second, born again? I mean, that seems rather uncomfortable for a number of people in this equation. Okay? And Jesus replied and said, I assure you, no one can enter the kingdom of God without being born of water, which is a physical way of birth, the breaking of the water. You've probably heard that expression, or water is broken. And of the Spirit. Humans can reproduce only human life, but the Holy Spirit gives birth to spiritual life. So Nicodemus is like, man, Jesus, you're doing a lot of cool things. I think you're the real deal. And Jesus says, look, Nicodemus, if you want to follow me, you need to be born of the Spirit. You need to believe. You need to make that decision to follow me. And then you will get the kingdom of God. Then you will get to see all this stuff. So understand, I mean, Paul was talking in 1 Corinthians about the old way of life. If you know of Jesus as a neat guy, or the guy we talk about at church, but that's it. There's no convinced, there's no belief, there's no that deep-seated, like, yeah, Jesus died for me. You're kind of in the same boat as Nicodemus, at least at the beginning of this conversation. We don't know totally where he went after this, but that Jesus is saying, look, you can't just know about me. You need to know me. You need to be born again. You need to be to take my life and to believe in everything that I have done. So you need to, if you're going to get rid of you, the first part, some of you, is that you need to stop being old. Get rid of the old you by trusting Jesus, by becoming a Christ follower. And I have not said become a Christian, because that word is so messed up that I'm not using it. But become a follower of Jesus. Believe that he is who he said he is, and he did what he said he does. And you don't need to know the whole deal. I don't know the whole deal about it. And there's a lot of stuff that even the smartest people still don't know everything about God. And I think that's probably a good thing. But just the fact that he's believing that he died, being born of the Spirit, then you will have hope for a new life. But without that, you don't. The second thing is that some of you, some of us, need to stop living old. Stop living old. So some of you intrinsically are not able to live new because you have not trusted Jesus. So there is no new you. But many of you, well, I say many, I'm just guessing, maybe some of you, including me, have become a follower of Jesus. The old self is done, is gone, and the new has come, and yet we're still living like we're old. We're still living in the past. We're still letting our sin catch up with us and hold us back. We're still like, I'm going to throw away most of the letters. I'm going to keep this one. Man, remember Chrissy? There was that time when we went over to the movie theater. I really like Chrissy. I think I'm going to hang on to her letter. What do you think about that, Kendra? Does that sound stupid? Yes. Because that's old, Sean. That's gone. It's done. And it's the same thing with our relationship with Christ. If you are following Jesus, stop living the old way. Stop living the old way. You're new. You're not trapped. You're not stuck in sin. You don't have to be that way. In 1 Corinthians, his first letter Paul wrote to the church in Corinth, he wrote this. He says, when I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. The other day, Tommy was singing and said this thing, and I'm like, what the heck are you talking about? And it made perfect sense to him as a 5-year-old boy. And I'm just like, that's nice. All right, you know. Because he's a child. He's thinking like a child. He's reasoning like a child. But Paul says, when I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. I stopped acting like a kid because I'm not a kid anymore. I am an adult now. And some of us need to man up. And if you're a woman, woman up. And stop living this old way. Stop going around going, how's that? Cool with that? I'm a kid. What? You're an adult. Talk like one. You're a follower of Jesus. Act like one. Stop living caught up in the past and the sin and the way you did things before and start living for Him now. Grow up. And I say that with love and I say that with a mirror. Sean, grow up. What's the deal? You don't have to do this. It's a mirror. You don't have to do this. You're new. You're not stuck in the old ways. You're not trapped in your sin. We've been made new. And that's the reality. That you, each of us, we need to grow to be more like Jesus, and growing to be more like Jesus means doing the things that Jesus did and acting the way Jesus acted and saying the things that Jesus said and thinking the things that Jesus thought. Because we're new. This may mean you might need to change some things for you. You may need to change the places that you go. Because the old you is taking you places that you shouldn't be at. Sorry. You don't belong there and you're still going to those places. And I don't know what that looks like. But that's the old you. The new you is different. The new you should not be there. Some of you need to change the words that you say. The things that you say to people. Maybe that's how you used to act. Maybe those were your childish ways. Maybe those were your ways before. But you need to change the way you're talking now. Because you are a follower of Jesus. You are a new creation. You are not stuck in the old ways. Some of you may need to change the relationships that you're in. Because those relationships, you know, maybe they look great on paper, but they're not following Jesus the way they should. Because that's the old you. You don't have to act that way anymore. You don't have to be in those relationships, the new you. Some of you need to change attitudes that you have. This is the way I always am. I don't care. That's old you. The new you is here. You're like a car on a showroom floor. You're great. You're perfect. Why are you living like you don't have 3 wheels and you got rust all over you? You're new. Stop living that way. Stop having that attitude. And maybe it's the stuff that you watch, you read, you listen to. There's something about you that's old you, that's sinful you, that you need to let go and say, no, I'm new me. Because Jesus has changed me. Because I'm a new creation. Now, understand this, please. If you all just look at me for a second. Let me say it the right way. This won't change you. Just doing good things will not change you. Only Christ will. Our obedience is a response to what Christ has done for us. And His way is best for us. So get that. Don't think, oh, I'm being good. I'm doing good things. Now Jesus will be happier with me. No. Now Jesus will take me into heaven because I was good. No. Jesus died for you. That's why you're going to heaven and you believe that. The rest of it is because He's done this for you, we want to live for Him because what He has in mind for you is the best. But our own selves said, no, this is better. This is better. Like, yeah, Kendra is good, but remember Jessica? I mean, you were going out with her for a long time. It was like 3 weeks. No. There's something better. Why are we stuck in the past? Why are we stuck in the old us? And then the last thing some of you need to do is to stop letting old hold you back. Some of you, man, you're living the right way, and you've trusted Jesus, you're a follower of His, but you're letting old you hold you back. You're going, I want to move this way, and old you saying, oh, but do you remember when you did that? Remember that time that you said that thing? Remember that decision that you made? Remember that relationship that you got caught up in? Remember that abortion that you had? Remember that person that you were with? And we're being held back by our sin, by the old us. And Jesus says, kick him in the face. Because the old you is gone. It's the new you now. You're a new creation. I don't care what you did 10 minutes ago, what thoughts you had. It's old you. It's gone. The past is gone. So stop letting old hold you back. Here's some of the things that we say when we have the old you holding us back. We say things like, but I can never forgive myself. And Jesus says, I've already forgiven you, so you can forgive yourself. You don't know what I've done. If you hear yourself saying that, Jesus says, no, I do, and I died for it. The old you is gone. The new is here to stay. But my mistakes, they can't be forgiven. Jesus said, yes, they can. And sometimes there's this attitude that says, well, after all the things I've done, I deserve this. And Jesus says, no, I took all the punishment so that you are new, so that you are a new creation. You're not stuck in the old ways. And so when you think about this idea of letting old hold you back, don't let it hold you back. Don't be stuck in your past. Carly, you can come on up. Don't be defined by who you were. Be defined by who you are now. You are a new creation. And let me just say this too. This is kind of an aside. You also can't define other people by their past either. And this is kind of a funny thing because when I go out and, you know, because I'm always talking about church and I love our church. I love MC3 and I'll tell stories like, oh, yeah, it's really cool. The people that God's bringing in and usually I don't bring this up. I'm not like, hey, have you heard about them? That's not the way it is. But people are like, hey, doesn't that person go to MC3? I'm like, yeah. And their response is, and I'm sorry, guys, we're just a bunch of losers, I guess. But typically the response is like, oh, I knew them in high school. Sure you want them in your church? Or, oh man, they don't really mean that they're going to their church. You don't accept them, do you? I mean, just kind of this idea of, oh, I knew them before, and so therefore there's nothing about them that's worth now. And I want you to understand, we need to stop doing that. On your chairs, you guys have a somewhere around you. If not, please grab one. There's a little love note to you from your old self. And again, if you don't have one, please grab one. There's extras here. I can throw some back if you need one. Anybody need one if there isn't one? Okay. Can we pass one back there to that back row? Yeah. And this is your love letter to you from your old self. And it says, dear you, remember how we used to ... love the old you. And what I'd like you to do between you, nobody's going to read these, no one's going to see these, and if you don't have a pen or pencil, just symbolically think about it. But is there something about you that is holding you back? Is there something about you that you need to get rid of? Is there something about you? Are you being old? Do you just need to use that paper and say, you know what? I need Jesus now. You need to believe in Him. Whatever that looks like, so the old you is gone, and now you have hope for Jesus. You can write that on your old love letter. Or maybe there's something about how you're living old. Maybe there's something that you're doing that you know you shouldn't. And it's time to say, you know what? That's the old me. I'm moving to the new me now. So maybe you write that thing on there. Maybe it's something that's holding you back and you're like, oh, but there was that time that I did this thing and I can't do anything else because of that. It's time to get rid of those things. And so what you're going to do is just take those pieces of paper, write down that thing. And then you're going to come up here when you're ready. And she's just going to play. I'm not going to talk after this. Just be a moment of just reflection of prayer. You know, there's nothing special about these love letters. Made them on a printer. But in a symbolic way, you're going to come up and burn your love letter from your old self. To say that I'm done with that. Man, the old is gone. The new has come. So whatever that might be, bring it up here quietly, reflectively. We're not going to make a lot of noise with this. And just throw it in. Because you're burning the old you. You're burning the old situation, that sin, that habit, that pattern, that person, that attitude. Whatever it may be, you are putting that into the barrel. And it's done. It's gone because you're a new creation. So we're going to do that now while Carla plays. And then after a few minutes, I will wrap us up. So just between you, God, and your piece of paper. God, we thank you. We thank you that we are not the old us, that we're not trapped by our past, that we're not stuck in it, that we don't need to be continually sinning because you have set us free through Jesus. This barrel here represents, God, our hearts, saying that we're done with the old way. We're done with the old stuff. Because we are new, and we are not new because we say we are new. We are new because you say that we are new. So thank you, Jesus, for taking everything on yourself and nailing it to the cross. Thank you, Jesus, that we are not old, but that we are new creations. It's in His name we pray. Amen.